Hi, I'm Amy Halloran, and you're here for another Food Diary. We are talking today on our Women in Grains segment with Dawn Woodward from Evelyn's Crackers in Toronto. Dawn, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Amy. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. So let's tell our listeners a little bit about your business and your growth in regional grains.
Sure. So we started about 10 years ago. The business is primarily myself and my husband, also my business partner, Ed. And we started making crackers with local or Ontario grains and in the whole grain form. And since then, we have expanded into breads and other baked goods. And then on a more personal level, I've sort of become a whole grain, local grain advocate and have done workshops in the States and taught at conferences and even got to travel to England last year to talk about my philosophy on why local grains are so important.
And why are local grains so important?
So there's a couple of reasons. From just a straight up chef perspective, I have a cooking background. I just think the flavor of grains really have an amazing capacity to express terroir, especially when they're used in the whole grain form because the flavor is in the bran and the endosperm. Grains can have really distinctive flavors from area to area. Plus, when you're working with smaller farmers, they have a better ability to grow different varieties and multiple varieties. And then you're working with smaller organic farmers. A lot of them have a huge interest in heirloom varieties. And just like heirloom veggies, a lot of heirloom grains have really superior flavor. And then from a political perspective, I think local food is what gives us autonomy and gives us diversity and is environmentally sustainable, right? We need to preserve farmland. We need to support farmers. We need to be able to make food choices and not be at the mercy of these huge agricultural businesses that just want to feed us bland commodity crops that are destroying the environment. So there's many reasons to support local grains. But I think that one of the easiest access points is just straight up flavor.
Yes, it starts with flavor, and then it has this whole cascading effect back to the ground. Can you talk a little bit? I think most people have a hard time understanding what we mean when we say that when we talk about the commodity grain system and the limited choices that creates both for growers and then for chefs and bakers and everyone along the way?
Sure. So when you ask people about local food, you know, they can name all sorts of items that they can buy locally. And I would bet you $1 million that wheat is never on that list. It has been so centralized and commoditized and mistreated that it's turned into a bag of dead white stuff that's on every shelf in every market. And nobody has any idea where it came from, how it was processed, who grew it, right? It's just weird. So when you put the local back into it, suddenly you're talking about, you have a sense of place, a sense of history. Suddenly wheat takes on all kinds of dimensions, and it has flavor when it's used in its whole grain form, or even a higher extraction, right, when it's run through the stone mill and lightly sifted. It comes alive. It becomes food instead of just this weird white stuff that we make sweet things with or bad bread with.
Right. And you can populate that as a baker with literal people doing the milling and doing the growing all the way back to the field. So that's the difference that I see between a commodity, homogeneous undertaking, and then things that are really individualized. So
yep.
It's a little bit easier, or a lot easier, really, in using a heritage grain, right, to get
right.
some kind of identity going. Can you talk about the
yep.
relationships that you have with the growers and the grains?
Sure. So right now I'm working primarily with two growers. One is this woman, Shelley Spruitt, of Against the Grain Farms, and she is primarily focused on regional grains, different kinds of barley, some interesting wheats, and corn. And then the other grower I work with is Peter Leahy of Maryland Organics, and he grows primarily wheats with some rye and buckwheat. So I think my relationship with these two people is extremely important. One, they're both farmers who have a keen interest in growing different varieties and want to work directly with the end user of the product. So they want feedback. They want to grow different things. So to be able to work together and be like, well, yeah, let's try this. And where can we find seed? And, you know, doing little test bakes for them and getting feedback. It's really important. It just gives a huge sense of place and makes me feel connected to the food system.
Right, because when you were baking with products from a larger food system, you certainly never would have seen a grower or even a miller.
No, not at all. It's just coming in the back of a huge truck, right, being unloaded by the pallet.
Right. And in baking, you know, it's I was surprised as I researched my book, and people would say, chagrined, bakers would say with a big bit of shame, I never thought about my main ingredient beyond the bag. And that's not their fault. But a lot of attention is given to the craft and the methods. And it's only recently that we're beginning to look backwards to the craft and the methods that go into the grain production and the milling itself.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, but I've always felt that if you want to call something artisan, to me, that extends all the way down to the ingredients. So if you're making your bread with commodity, non-organic, roller milled white flour, I don't consider your product artisan. You know, I really draw a line in the sand at that.
Right.
You know, regardless of your technique and your background, you know, technique is great. But at this point, I think food is so political. The earth is in crisis. We need to be conscientious of how we're practicing our business on every level. And just to be focused on technique and mastery of something is, I find, sort of a conceited and very limiting notion if we're not part of the bigger picture.
Right. And you can really make an impact. In your sales of food, what kind of dialogues do you have with your customers about the sourcing?
All kinds. People, been at a farmer's market, people really come with a lot of their food fears. And because they know it's a slightly alternative place to shop, and you are right there behind the table for them to either engage with, or they can accost you. You get all kinds. But people just have a lot of questions, but a lot of it is based on fear and lack of information. And I'm really happy to engage, but part of me finds it kind of sad that we've somehow reached this state where people are afraid to put food in their mouths.
Right. And especially when there's so many more important conversations you could be having,
yes,
in your brief moments together.
Yes. Yes. It's really focused on individual diets and what they should be avoiding. And I had this conversation earlier today, actually, with somebody about people are still asking about GMO grain. And I mean, I'm absolutely against GMOs because of seed patenting and corporate ownership. But, you know, there is no GMO grain on the market.
Right.
Right. You can't. And plus, my grains are certified organic, and I do advertise that, and people still ask if they're GMO. So it just shows that there's just a really big disconnect. I also have really fruitful conversations with, you know, other customers who don't have so many dietary issues and can engage more about local or more about on a flavor perspective of like why rye versus buckwheat, or why am I not just using regular wheat? You know, so it does run the gamut. So,
yeah. So talk a little bit about the non-wheat grains that you're embracing and the fun that you're having with them.
Yeah. So when we started the business, we just thought, okay, the grain really has to dictate what we're going to do, because this is what's available and we have to make it work, right? And we can't make it do something it's not going to do, right? Whether it's because of the milling or the protein level or whatever. So the crackers were a really easy entry into whole grains. And then because I do have a baking background, I've, you know, ventured into other things. And so there's loads of buckwheat here. There's loads of rye. And I'm just like, well, what can I do? And sweets are always an easy access point for people, you know, because sugar tastes good or maple syrup tastes good. And you can do it so it's recognizable. You know, a brownie still looks like a brownie, even if it's made with buckwheat. So people would know it's a brownie, then they would taste it and they'd be like, oh, but what's going on here? Why is this different? I'm like, right, because it's buckwheat, not white flour, right? So buckwheat plays against the chocolate, or the rye plays, you know, against the chocolate that we do in the cookie, or the emmer goes really well with the apricot in the tart, you know, and then you can do flavor combos. We do a crust with rye and cornmeal. Like, that's a beautiful combination.
Mm.
So suddenly people are talking about what should have been a base, like the tart shell or the slice of bread. It actually becomes the focal point, right? It's not just a carrier for your hazelnuts and spices and all of these other things, right? The grain itself is what people are noticing.
Because you're able to celebrate it as an ingredient with as much contribution as anything else.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So the grain is a flavor, right? It's not the background or the base. The grain is the flavor. It's what we want to highlight. And having to use these grains that have different gluten properties than wheat, or different absorption qualities, or, you know, different textures, has led us to some fairly, in some ways, non-traditional baking. I mean, our stuff looks decidedly different from the other bakers at the market.
Because in terms of colors and...
Colors, and then just kind of what we do. Mm-hmm. I mean, things, they definitely look a little browner, maybe a little more... It's also my baking style is definitely more on the rustic side. Mm-hmm. But I think our stuff tastes really good, right? It doesn't taste like... you know, that bad whole grain baking from the way back when.
The brick, right? Times, the times of the brick bread, right?
Yeah, it's the bad hippie baking, you know, which is helped us get to where we are. But, you know, we're very aware that things have to taste good.
Right. And as a baker and a business owner and a grain activist, what are you excited about as we enter a new year, or the year is still feeling newish?
Yeah, I think the whole grain thing really seems to be taking off. You know, it's been in major publications, use of different grains, whole grains. Regional grain economy seems to be a fairly common term now on Instagram, at least in my own little, you know, baker's feed. I think women are sort of getting talked about more, in some ways, but, you know, the dominant few guys still dominate the field, which drives me nuts. And a lot of food writers still write about the same three male bakers. But it seems things are changing. I think it's really exploded in the States. You know, it's amazing to watch Elmore Mountain Bread literally travel the world to share their knowledge and share their mills. You know, that wasn't happening 10 years ago. And look at them now. And that makes me really excited and really happy.
Right. It's a kind of combo of, I can't believe how far we've come, and I also can't believe how far there is to go.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's see. If there were a dream way that you could express yourself as a baker, what do you think that would look like? If all the YouTube and television stations of the world were suddenly tuned to something that you could have 5 minutes to show a premier baked good and tell this story of regional grains, do you often dream something magical like that?
Oh,
I'm really putting you on the spot there.
I don't know. I mean, I think, I know it's been done so many times, but sure, you know, let's highlight a farmer who's also a seed saver, and let's watch her grow out. You know, somehow time lapse the 8 years it's taken her from the handful of seed to a crop that she can sell. And then she takes it to the miller who's going to mill it beautifully. And then it goes to the baker who's going to make something really delicious. And then do a taste test where people can have the white flour version and the whole grain single varietal version and watch their reaction.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's pretty immediate, right? If even just in a shortbread cookie, if you're eating one with emmer versus one with white flour, the emmer one tastes better.
It's mind-blowing. You know? Fresh flour with its germ and bran it really can change your life, you know? And I love how in your little mini movie, you included it all the way back to the field, because this is an entire process. It's we're not just overlooking all the women bakers, but we're overlooking all the women seed savers and farmers and all the humans who are involved in this very intimate act of feeding ourselves every day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it's also a very highly political act too, right? I mean, we're really exercising autonomy, right? And fighting against a big system that has no interest in helping us out and really wants to squash us.
Right.
You know, they're actively co-opting what we do, you know, and it's scary. So my dream world would be a bunch of small independent businesses, right? Just have a lot of bakeries everywhere, have mills everywhere, have farmers, all kinds of farmers growing all kinds of grains, right? Like just a real decentralization of things.
And then everyone would have these attachments so that in their head, their heroes are local and their heroes are the people who help them eat on a daily basis instead of, you know, all the other far, far, far away people that we sometimes admire.
Yeah. Right. And I think if you want to compare it to wine, like, grain and terroir, grain grown in New England is going to be different than grain grown in California. So be able to get back to that stage where grain expresses where it comes from, right? Or certain types of areas grow certain kinds of grain. Somebody today told me about a kind of grain that was growing here that I've never heard of. It was called Dawson's Golden Shaft. It was a really huge wheat, and I've never heard of it, and it's gone, right? And it was really only grown in Ontario, it seems. I mean, I need to find out more about it, but, you know, things like that, and it's like, oh, wow, okay, right? You know, if we can talk about Burgundy and Bordeaux or a California cab, I want to talk about, New York Emmer versus, you know, California Sonora.
Of course. And maybe it will take on eventually within our lifetimes the kind of cachet that people have for being familiar with the varieties and varietals and where things are from. Maybe we'll get there with grains. Yeah.
I hope so.
I do too. I do too. Well, so
good. So who else? Go on. Sorry.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Brazilian amber?
Oh, sure. So that's grown. Right now it's being grown by Shelley Spruitt. And she's grown a fair amount of it, but she needs to develop a market for it before she grows more. So she's given it to me, and I've handed it out to 3 or 4 bakers here, and we're going to do a little grain pop-up about it at the end of February. And the background of that wheat seems to be, so yes, it was grown in Brazil, but originally it is Nikolai Vavilov wheat from Russia in the 1920s. It was one of his wheats, and it's very drought-resistant.
Cool.
So that's why she started growing it, because we've had, just like everywhere else, crazy summers, and last summer was a big drought up here, and it really affected the grain harvest. So this wheat seems to do really well, and it's really pretty, and it has a fairly mild flavor because it is an amber, not a red wheat. So we'll see.
Great. Sounds like it has a lot of potential.
I think so, you know, and it seems to have a good flavor, and so I'm hoping to get some more feedback from the other bakers and then just see at this little pop-up we're going to do. Hopefully some chefs will be there and home bakers and get their feedback on it.
That's great. And when is the pop-up?
February 25th.
February 25th. Yeah, so check out Evelyn's Crackers on Instagram for more info on that and to get mouthwateringly hungry by just looking at the beautiful creations that Dawn makes. Dawn, thank you so much for joining me. I'm really happy to hear some more about your work.
Oh, thanks, Amy. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I can't wait to hear the podcast on all the podcasts and everyone you interview.
Awesome. Thanks, Dawn.
All right. Oh, thanks. All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in. This has been another Women in Grains Food Diary with Amy Halloran, Food Security Case Manager at Unity House.